is Kartik Malhotra, and I'm joined on this cast today by two of the most formidable voices we have on strategic affairs. Praveen Swamy, Group Consulting Editor, Network 18, and retired Lieutenant General B.R. Shankar. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on this cast today. General Shankar, let me start by asking you, has COVID-19 been in some way an accidental dry run or a test case for India to figure out its preparedness to handle and mitigate a potential bio attack on our soil sometime in the future?
I think the COVID-19 is in some way a wake-up call for all of us that though it's not biological warfare by any stretch of imagination, it has portents of being so. And hence, our responses to this entire episode will let us know as to where we are for a future scenario if it does happen. To that extent, yes, this is almost a test run for any future scenario which could develop.
Praveen, let me throw this to you. Do you agree with the general? Do you think India has handled the situation well? Given that this wasn't a planned exercise, this wasn't a planned event, it's something that came and hit us. Do you think India has been able to control the situation fairly well as compared to some of the other countries that are really in the midst of this pandemic right now?
What you're saying is exactly right. I mean, look, I don't think there's any point pretending that we've done some sort of, you know, incredible job of this and everything is perfect. But a crisis of this size, which had never been gamed or anticipated or stocked for, I think all in all, we haven't done a bad job of pulling things together and slowly trying to, you know, negotiate our way through this mess. Now, having said that, I think some of the lessons are interesting. We didn't have, say, stocks of personal protective equipment. Police forces and emergency service responders had never rehearsed for something like this. We weren't in a position to instantly set up hospitals with tens of thousands of beds, the kinds of, you know, and that's partly because no one ever thought a bio attack would take place on a scale like this. It was always modeled as a more contained thing where people could step in more rapidly. And to me, one of the lessons of this episode is that you can't separate your bioweapons response from your overall capacity. So if your medical system is efficient and well-resourced, your bioweapons response, just like a pandemic response, will be more efficient.
Where does the buck stop? So in the case of a pandemic, it's obvious that the pandemic is something that rests with the health ministry. But in the case of a potential bio war on our soil, does the buck stop with the armed forces or the Ministry of Defense? Does it stop with the Home Ministry? Or is it still something that the health ministry needs to take cognizance of? Where does the buck stop in the case of a potential bio war?
Bio war scenario, bioterrorism scenario, it is a effort which has to be mounted on a multi-ministry level, inter-ministerial structure, which today we really lack. The nearest to that is the NSA's office. At the end of the day, the moment you say it's a biological weapon or a bioterror weapon, it's a security issue. Then NSA is supposed to coordinate all this, right? And handle the issue. And then you can set up an interministerial joint command post or a response system by which you can actually deal with the thing.
So Praveen Swamy, is there any planning, any direction, anything happening to create an integral structure within the government to handle a situation like this? Are there any talks in the government bodies around this?
Yes and no. There are a lot of plans people have from time to time drawn up. Like I said, the NDMA in 2008 drew up a lot of serious thinking guidelines for the dealings with of a bioterrorist attack. But when you actually go to the ground and look at, now remember when a bioterrorist attack happens, you don't have time to be sitting around and setting up committees and thinking about it. Ideally, the system would have rehearsed and prepared for it so that everyone knows what they are supposed to be doing and kicks into place immediately. So to give one small example, a few years ago, you had a terrorist attack on the Boston Marathon, you'll recall. The hospitals in Boston did not lose a single patient who was brought to the hospital alive out of hundreds of casualties. The reason they were able to achieve that is because they had repeatedly, time and again, rehearsed for a mass casualty terrorist event And everyone from the nurses to the ward orderlies to the ambulances to the policemen on the road knew exactly what they're supposed to be doing when a crisis happens. So that when the crisis happened, you don't have to sit around thinking about it. And unfortunately, with a lot of our national plans, we're not very good at this rehearsal end of the thing. Now, again, there are reasons for that. Our doctors, there are very few doctors, there are very few public servants, there are too few police people. And whenever you go to these guys and say, actually, you should give up a lot of time for training, generally, that is not a welcome idea for any administrator. But for this to work, this has to happen. The second thing I just want to say is that, look, a biological agents war involving nation states is pretty unlikely, particularly between great powers, because any nation state faced with a bioweapons attack will respond to an attack using weapons of mass destruction with nuclear weapons. And nuclear weapons, as the general will explain better, are far more efficient weapons to annihilate your adversary than any biological agent. What is more likely is that as terrorist groups acquire greater sophistication, as especially gene manipulation technology, DNA manipulation technology, CRISPR, becomes more prevalent, and it's already CRISPR tests which allow you to manipulate genes in your back garden, basically, in a tool shed, the possibility of a terror attack using such biological agents goes up manifold. CRISPR is a real threat to all of us. And if we don't start actually turning some of our nice, elegant paper plans into well-rehearsed, immediately implementable processes, there's always the possibility that we will wake up to a very unhappy shock one of these days.
So, General Shankar, let me ask you, what would be perhaps the three main lessons that India should take from the way it has handled this situation, and three mistakes that should not be repeated in case a situation like this arises, whether a pandemic or a bio attack?
You know, I would like to highlight something. This pandemic has happened, a lot of research has come out, a lot of solutions have come out. In India, we are debating solutions from Johns Hopkins or Cambridge. Where is our own research? Where are our IITs? Where are our medical institutions? Where is Indian Institute of Science? Where are our engineering colleges coming up with solutions? The second thing is your response system. I understand the DRDO had a model of a ventilator long back, which now has gone into production. And this I'm telling you from quite authentic sources. Why is it that was kept in the cold storage and not brought into the market, and that you have to depend on outside agents? It indicates a lack of great coordination between agencies. So I think the major thing which has come out of this is we have to depend on ourselves for this. And we have to have our systems within our production capacities to make it. So I think all these issues are missing. Population control is a problem. If you see the Nipah epidemic which happened a few years back, we handled beautifully. We've handled H1N1, swine flu, in many parts of our country. We have the capacities, we have to put it together. You know, there is no getting away from this.
There is potential. I think capacity building is required. Better coordination is required for India to be able to mitigate its risks going forward. General Shankar, Praveen Swamy, many thanks for joining us on this cast.